The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is Bicycle Talk to be broadcast on June 28th, 2023 at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She is working today. She's off to the Cape later this week, so she wanted to make sure she got some work time in before she left. If you are watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment. I may be able to respond, and I may not, but we'll give it a shot. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can either leave your comment down here below, or you could easily email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and hopefully I'll be able to respond. So anyway, recording my shows now on Mondays, and we are playing them on 91.7 FM and WHUS.org on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or FMRadioFree.com. Ron's Rant of the Week. All right, now that I've finally got through all the stuff we need to talk about. All right, here it comes, folks. Big rant. So anyway, I got a notice from my friend Chris Kearns this past weekend, and he was hit by an SUV in an intersection in Manchester. He's okay. He's going to be fine. That's all good. Probably got a few little bruises and a few little scrapes, which will be a little sore for a little while, but he's okay. He lost a helmet in the deal and ended up getting himself a new helmet. But anyway, he says, "Tell me, Ron, what do I do? Do I have to stop riding?" Absolutely not. Never. That's the wrong answer. "I was going straight through an intersection, no stop sign, the SUV overtook me, turning right in front of me and clipped me and the front wheel. Thank goodness for helmets. It is broken, and besides hitting my head on the pavement, my butt is a little sore, and I have road rash on both elbows." And I said, "Get a copy of the police report." Why do I want a copy of the police report? Because I want to see and make sure that the police, when they were called in, by the way, there were lots of witnesses, and apparently the person driving the SUV, the woman driving the SUV, claims that she didn't know she had done it or hit him. But anyway, there were tons of witnesses, so I want to see the police report. The reason I want to see the police report is because a lot of states have 3-foot rules. Some states have, even better, 4-foot rules, which means that that motorized vehicle cannot be within that distance of that cyclist legally. If the person gets hit, that fine should be in place. There should be at least a fine of, unfortunately, $100 is what we start out with here in Connecticut. And then it grows as you continue to hit people with your cars. So if you, first offense, though, is $100, I believe. So anyway, I want to see a copy of the police report. And Chris said he will get me a copy of the police report and let me see it as soon as he is able. As far as for me being okay, he took Saturday off and he bought a new helmet from the local bike shop. And yesterday, which was Sunday, he did an easy hair of the dog ride on his fat bike back to where he was hit to finish his intention from the day before, which was going to visit a friend. Outside of extra caution and anxiety, the site, I felt 100% normal. At this point, I told him that he needs to go back and he needs to spit on the monster. So this is kind of a Ron classic. I've been doing it for years. I'm not going to take all the credit for it. I think my ex-wife actually had something to do with this one too. It goes back. But anyway, when you have had an incident out there somewhere on the road, a crash or something terrible that might have happened to you, you need to go back to where it happened and you need to spit on the site, which is called spitting on the monster. So I believe that my ex-wife spit on the monster many, many years ago when she was out paddling in Mansfield Hollow when there was a lot of ice on the lake, and she was a pretty serious canoe paddler, and she they tipped the boat over, which meant very, very cold water, very cold, and swim to shore real quick and, you know, run up to the house to get into a hot shower. It's a long story. But anyway, as soon as the lake thawed and she could get back into the boat again, she went out and she spit on the site, which was called spitting on the monster. So anyway, so I ramble on. Shout out to Kathy. Death, congestion, costly road repairs. What is the upside of SUVs? Injuries from crashes involving supersized cars increased in New York City by 91%, and fatalities are up 75% between 2016 and 2019, according to a new report that highlights not only the rising road violence, but also the damage to roadways caused by America's ongoing obsession with exceptionally large cars and trucks. I know, Billy, I'm sorry if you're listening. I talked about cars and trucks again, but I have to. But of course, this and more in the show. Moving on to the positive side, let's go there. All right, summertime. And the living is easy. Why I love summer weather. Boy, is it nice out. So, you know, it's not like super nice. It's kind of muggy right now. And it's a little damp. And I rode in some fog this morning. That was interesting. The fog was so thick this morning that there was a constant drip off the front of my helmet. That's kind of fun. If you're a regular seasoned cyclist, you know what I'm talking about. And of course, the glasses were pretty much useless after a while because they had this misty whatever all over them. But it was 67 degrees out, 68 degrees out. That's Fahrenheit for those of you who listen across the pond. And, you know, that's pretty warm. That's pretty warm for 4:15 or when did I leave this morning? 4:45 in the morning. That's warm. That's pretty warm. That means it's supposed to get up pretty warm today. It'll probably get up into the 80s. It's going to be hot and humid. That's kind of classic for us this time of year. We do get this. But the thing I'm probably trying to be positive about is we just haven't seen any really good warm weather for a while. So here it is. And we got it yesterday and we got it today. And that was really nice. And I got to ride my bike up to the community center and teach my class and ride back home. That was really nice too. I always love that. By the way, I have not moved the car. I have not driven the car for now. I'm going on 3 days. Yeah, bicycle only. Interesting, huh? Yeah, and I'm going to try to hold true to that all the way through today, unless something comes up where I should have to use the car. But I'm going to try really hard not to. Pretty cool. Man, 3 days in a row will be a record for me. That'll be really cool. And it's the thing that I like to encourage people to do. Take a shot at it. See how long you can go without using your car. That's always a good time. If you can do it just for one day, that's great. Beautiful, only a half a day. Yeah, so, but let's try real hard. Cycling USA Nationals were this past weekend. Lots of results. We'll have more in the show. I will get to that later on. And let's see, what else do I have here on positive side? Not too much. sorry to say. I know what it was. I know there was another thing. Connecticut now has an e-bike incentive program. Yeah, I attended a webinar last week, and it was all about the Connecticut e-bike incentive program, and they are now accepting applications on June 28th, 2023, 9 a.m. And e-bike consumers and retailers must use the following program links. And you can find all this on ct.gov, ct.gov. There's a portal here. So it's a portal.ct.gov/DEEP air mobile source. Whatever. It's long, too long to explain on a podcast or a radio show. But anyway, if you start out by just going to ct.gov, you can find out more about the Connecticut e-bike program. It's exciting. There could be up to $1,500 coming back at the consumer for getting a certified e-bike. Yes, there are only specific bikes which can be purchased in order to do it. And there are few places that you can get them, but they're there and you can do it. And it's a start. My hope is that it gets people that are... I think that there is a financial challenge clause in here. I think there is a certain financial requirement per household here. And the requirements are not high. The requirements are low. So what we're talking about here is if you don't make a lot of money and you need transportation, the e-bike is going to be an answer, and it's going to be incentivized by the state of Connecticut. This is a positive thing. This is a total positive thing. The more I find out about it, the more I will tell you. Mechanical minute and cycling tips. So I had this conversation the other day, and as I often do with people who come to me and say, Ron, you're just such a curmudgeon. I can't believe that you still ride on tubular tires. Well, you know, not always. I rode on clinchers this morning. Not always. But I do ride on tubular tires still. I like my tubular tires. And yeah, I'm one of those guys. Now, I have a bonus. And that bonus is that I am very light. I do not... I'm not a large person by any means. I'm a little skinny, half Italian guy. So, I tend to be easier on my equipment because of that. And I have a lot of friends who are not my size at all. And they're a lot harder on their equipment. Are they going to be riding on tubular tires? Probably not, because they're not going to have the same success that I have. I have great success with them. I like them a lot. I'm riding on a set of wheels right now. I'm on my... Oh boy, I don't understand why this tire is lasting so long, but we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I've got a set of tires on that bike that are just, they're going on. I just started my third season with them, which is remarkable. Now, granted, I do not ride them all the time, so it's not like I've got, you know, thousands and thousands of miles on them, but I have more miles on them than I should have. I'll put it that way, because they don't generally last that long. So that brought me to the aging tubular question, and the question that someone asked me about. So what's all this about aging tubulars? I read this thing that said that Lance Armstrong, remember that guy? Boy, let's try to forget. Lance Armstrong used to, you know, age his tires in a root cellar, or some of the guy that he got them from got them in a root cellar and all. That's probably more than what was going on in that root cellar. But anyway, minor comment about our good friend, Mr. Armstrong. Like fine wine and cheese, tubulars benefit from an aging process. Okay, so... I have a few little sites here that I went to. I went to the cyclocross site, cxmagazine.com. They had a little article about aging tubulars and why you should age tubulars. But I'll tell you, I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version of all this, because as I looked at it more and more, it was like, oh my God, everyone's got an opinion about this. This is crazy. But here's the bottom line. Aging a tubular tire is only really beneficial if you are aging a handmade tire. All right. So handmade tire. What the heck does that mean? All right. Yeah, there are tires that are actually, you know, they actually hand glue the tread onto the tire, onto the casing of the tire. That is a handmade tire. It's usually a very high TPI tire, so you'll get up near 300 TPI on that. That's threads per inch, for those of you who aren't aware of what that means. The higher TPI tires are my favorites because they just ride so much nicer, including I have a 300 TPI clincher that I ride on, which I really like a lot. And I got a couple of different brands that I like a lot that have really high TPI because it just feels better underneath you. It just feels more, it's more supple. It rolls into the corners. It moves with the bike. It moves with you. It's just, it's an experience. Like fine wine. So they say. So anyway, there are a lot of opinions out there about this. And of course, you know, I had to, you know, look them all up and seeing, you know, what we could do about. So we're going to go to a few different areas here, including where is it? So Why is there an aging process and why do people do it? So this goes all the way back to the old Sheldon Brown days and Harris Cyclery, RIP, both Sheldon Brown and Harris Cyclery, one of my favorite bike shops in New England. Unfortunately, they had decided to close, but they maintained the whole Sheldon Brown site, which was, it's kind of the mechanical Bible of old cool stuff in cycling, because Sheldon was really, really into it. So, non-vulcanized tires that have been hand-glued with cold adhesives need time for the bonds to strengthen. All right, so they use this glue to glue the tread onto the already constructed tire. All right. And that glue over time sets better. All right. Whereas a heat sealed tire, where they basically heat seal the tread onto the casing, you should just ride those as soon as you can, I guess. I'm a little in debate on that one because I've had some tires that I've let sit for a little bit before I put them on and ridden them. And I have there are a couple things that happen. So the other thing that happens is the actual rubber of the tire ages to a point where it gets a little harder. Now, on a vulcanized tire, that may not be a good thing. It may dry and crack, and that may not be such a good thing. But on a non-vulcanized tire, on one that's handmade, it actually makes the tread get stronger. And what that means is it's less susceptible to cut. Cool, huh? Not only is it less susceptible to cut, but it is also going to be... it's going to last longer because the rubber gets a little bit harder, but it doesn't get so hard it doesn't grip real well because it's a tubular tire, and tubular tires they move in the corners. And you know, well, anyway, I know, not important for a lot of you out there because everybody's riding on tubeless tires now, not my favorite. Anyway, we've already had that conversation in previous episodes. You know what they ride like? They ride just like tubulars, or almost like tubulars. Why is everyone comparing to the best? The best is the best. Ride tubulars. Solve the argument, solve the problem. All right, I'll leave it alone. I've beaten this dead horse enough. But I just wanted to bring it up as to what the difference was and how amazed I am, because I did buy a few handmade tubulars a few years ago, and I was able to... I take them and I put them on rims and I let them stretch and I let them cure. And I don't have a wine cellar to put them in or a root cellar to put them in, because apparently that cool dry space is what it really, really likes. But I have a cool, relatively dry garage underneath my house, which is, you know, it's close enough. And I'm just getting remarkable, remarkable results from this last set of tires that I put on. Back in the day, back years ago, when I really couldn't afford to do all this, it was, and it, the tires were like super, well, they still are super expensive, but I didn't have the luxury that I have now, and now I can age tires, and that's kind of cool. It's kind of a neat thing. I even stumbled across some Michelin tires from Europe that you can't buy here, and but if you look around, you might be able to find a set of pro race fours in tubulars, which I did, and those are kind of cool too. The downside to them is let me see, what is the downside? I don't have one. Anyway, I have latex tubes inside of these things, so they deflate overnight. But that's good too, because you shouldn't keep full pressure in your tires at all times. You should let them out a little bit. It relieves the pressure on the casing, and then you inflate them every time you go out and ride. That's not a big deal, especially if you have a good pump. And yes, I am that guy that has an old Silka Track pump. I do. I'll admit it. And yes, it still works great. And yes, it's over 40 years old. What can I say? They work. You don't have to constantly replace them. Not made out of plastic. It's made out of Columbus tubing. It's what it is. All right. I've gone way off on a tangent on this, and I'm going to move on. So let's go back to that right-hand turn. All right. I have here the right-hand turn thing. That's what I said. So many drivers fail to look right when they are making right-hand turns. If they see no oncoming traffic on their left, they proceed with their turn. There it is. And how many times have you done this? If you've been in a motorized vehicle and you're driving your car down the road and you're getting ready to make a right-hand turn, and you're going to do like a roll through because it's right turn on red, or you're just checking to see if anybody's coming from the left. You're looking to the left. You're never looking to the right. If there's a cyclist there or a pedestrian there, smush, not good, because we don't look in both directions. Researchers at the University of Toronto are verifying our intuition that drivers are not looking where they should be. They have been studying driver awareness by tracking drivers' eye movements while navigating, and they are seeing an alarming number of visual scan failures in a small study of relatively experienced drivers done all the way back in 2018. Over half did not look for cyclists, pedestrians when turning right. A subsequent study found similar results, and now they're expanding their testing. New York City does not allow right turns on red except when signed otherwise. But everywhere else in the United States, they are allowed by default. As our cities have gotten more crowded, as we are encouraging more people to bike and walk, shouldn't we be much more careful with these turns at busy intersections? Right turns on green are no picnic for cyclists either, even when they're in a bike lane, because of the danger of the right hook when a right turning vehicle cuts off a cyclist or pedestrian who is going straight with the light. I know for a fact that there are probably tons of people out there that have had this experience if you are a regular cyclist. So what do you do here? There is a way of dealing with this. All right. It's in order to ride in traffic, you must become traffic. Got this. Listen to that one more time. In order to ride in traffic, you must become traffic. No longer are you riding your bike, you are driving your bike, all right? If you can take that principle and plug it into your head, life will get easier for you when you're commuting on your bike. I did it this morning. I needed to make a left-hand turn to come into my road as I was riding home. I am riding down the road. I glance in my mirror. I don't see anyone coming, but I know that the traffic moves pretty good on this road because it is a state road. I'm only on it for you know, less than a half a mile, but I'm on it. And I'm on this road. So as I see my left-hand turn approaching, I immediately go all the way out to the center line of the road. I stick my arm out pointing to the left, and then my radar goes off on my bicycle, and I am being rapidly approached by a car from behind. Okay, I've got my finger out there. I'm pointing in that direction. That's the way I'm going to turn. I am sitting on the center line. It is very obvious. The car that's coming up from behind, very clean and very smooth, without hesitation, pulls off to my right-hand side, goes around me like I'm just a car that's turning at that intersection, because I am now driving my bike. I am not riding my bike. And I make a very safe turn, and the driver continues their journey down the road. Not rocket science, all right? This is common sense. That's what this is. Super, super simple. I communicated to the driver of that car without even looking at him by doing what I did today. So there you go. That's the left-hand turn. The right-hand turn, a totally, totally different animal, for sure. So the left-hand turn becomes, what do you do in a situation like this? This is my advice to Chris, if he is listening. So I'm approaching an intersection, and the roads are busy, and, you know, I gotta say, that radar on my bike, thank you, Garmin. Thank you, Garmin. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys invented something that is, like, uber cool. It's the best I've ever used. It's definitely one of the best improvements I've put on my bicycle in a very, very long time. I can ride in the middle of the road now and know when a car is coming behind me, and then I can make the proper decision about what I need to do for my safety and also for the ease of letting the driver of that vehicle get around me. Radar on the back of your bike is so incredibly cool. If you can afford it, do it. Definitely do it. It will make your life a lot safer. Makes a big, big, big deal. So, how to ride straight when a car is turning in front of you. So every problem comes with a solution. You do know this, right? I'm here hopefully to help you with the solution. Let's set the stage. You're minding your own business, biking straight in the bike in a bike lane, and it looks like a car wants to turn right at the intersection ahead, directly across your path. Preferably, they put their blinker on, but you can also tell from the subtle clues, like front wheels turning slightly to the right of the car, drifting slightly closer to the bike lane, that you're behind. So you're behind a car with plenty of space, but you worry that it may merge into your lane, slow down, and turn right. What do you do? Well, anybody who knows how to operate with a bike lane near an intersection knows that if there is a cyclist in that bike lane, they are not to pass. They are to get behind the bike that is in the bike lane. But they don't always do that, because they want to get to where they're going a lot faster than you do. So they think. All right. Not necessarily the truth, but that's we got to look at the human mind and how it thinks and how it works, and, you know, habits, old habits, with new problems out on the road because more cyclists are out there. So it's the situation is that they are not willing to take the 10 seconds of time to allow you to get through the intersection. So, because that's going to interrupt their day, like, and I think I made this reference a couple of weeks ago, not that sitting in the drive-through line at McDonald's is going to take you 10 seconds, but we digress, so I'll go forward. If you pass this car on the right, you may get right hooked. So the cars come around you, you try to pass it on the right, the car's going to turn right into you, and you're going to be in trouble. So, although you have the right of way here and the car is at fault, there are ways to avoid this situation to begin with. The scenario where you catch up to A turning car is more common on a bike-friendly street with bike lanes where vehicles aren't going much faster than bicycles, which should be the streets you're riding on. If your city doesn't have any of these streets, start complaining to the city leaders. We've had this conversation so many times. So on a less friendly bicycle streets where vehicles are often going much faster than bicycles, the common scenario, the right hook, is when a driver tries to pass you and then turn in front of you without realizing you're still right next to the car, because a lot of times they don't realize that you're probably going, you know, anywhere from 12 to 20 miles an hour, and they have to turn down, they have to bring it down to 20 miles an hour to make the turn safely in their vehicle. So, you know, there's a problem. So the common scenario for the right hook is the driver tries to pass you, and looking back before an intersection and staying in the middle or left part of the lane can help prevent drivers from trying to pass and turn in front of you like this. So this is the answer. Chris, if you're listening, if you're on a busy enough road where there's lots of cars coming and going and you have a mirror on your bike, hopefully, and I know you do because I've seen you with mirrors on your bikes. You want to just take a quick, if you're approaching an intersection, you want to look in that mirror, and you got to drive offensively defensive. How do I put this? You've got to, if you see that car coming up, you got to get out in the lane. That's no ifs, ands, or buts. Get in front of the car. If you're in front of the car cannot make a right-hand turn in front of you because they are behind you. And what you are doing is you are communicating that you have the safe right of passage through that intersection just like they do. It will cost them maybe 10 or 15 seconds of their day to behave. But that's exactly what's going to happen. Hey, Chris, a different Chris watching today. So this is the point. You want to, like I said earlier, and this is so incredibly important, in order to ride in traffic, you have to become traffic. You have to be traffic. You have to drive your bicycle. So the safest, most legal way to handle a situation is switch places with the car. You, the cyclist, merge into car traffic behind the car and then pass to the left. So this is if the car has passed you. So now the car has gone past you, and maybe they have their signal on. They probably don't if they're from around these parts. And you've got the situation where you're coming up along, you're coming up fast on their right-hand side. You're going to get hit if that car makes a right-hand turn. So the first thing you do when that car comes past you is get out into the lane and get right behind the car. Let them make the right-hand turn. And again, in order to be safe in traffic, you have to become traffic. So these are the ways to deal with this situation. There are so many little tricks. The more you spend time riding in traffic, the better you get at it. And you're just going to have to deal with the fact that drivers are not taught how to do this correctly at this point. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation with a driver a number of years ago because they were, I will say this very loosely, kind enough to stop when I tapped the side of their vehicle really hard. Yeah, I do that. And needless to say, I was able to have a rational conversation with them because I was very quick at thanking them for stopping and then explaining the situation and what was going on. And when this person, after I gave this person all of the rules, the 3-foot rule, and, you know, here's what, you know, a bicycle is a vehicle in the state of Connecticut, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I went through all of these things. They looked at me and said, "I had no idea." And I said, "Well, That's probably because, and I looked at the age of the person that I was talking to, and I would guess that they were in late 40s, early 50s, probably. I said, I would guess that's probably because you haven't taken a driver's test recently. And they laughed at me, and they said, no, I hadn't taken a driver's test since I was 16. And I went, exactly. So how would you know? Unless you met someone like me who was kind enough to explain what's going on and how this all works. This is my big gripe with the Department of Transportation, otherwise known as the Department of Cars and Trucks here in Connecticut. Why are we not continually educated on the changing of the laws, or at least as we see more and more vulnerable users out there on the streets, why are we not continually educated as to how to deal with that? But we are not. Not even a notification in your driver's license renewal or your registration renewal for your motorized vehicle. Not even a notification. Nothing at all. Get it together, Connecticut. Get it together, Department of Transportation, Cars and Trucks. I know who you prefer. I know you don't like me. But guess what? We're out there, and we need to have better driver education. If you reach the ripe old age of me, you can actually take a re-education class through AARP, and that will help you keep your insurance rates down, so they say. Haven't yet seen the rates go down. But anyway, at that point, you are taught how to, you know, how to, you're basically reapplying for your license is what you're doing. And so you have to answer all the questions. Here in Connecticut, we have a required question on the driver's license test that refers to vulnerable users. We have one. There should be 10, but I'm not going to get, you know, I'm going to pick nits here or anything, but you know what? That's what I would love to see, but it's just probably not going to happen. Maybe two, maybe three questions that refer to what do you do with a pedestrian in a crosswalk? Or, you know, what do you do when you're coming up upon a cyclist and you want to make a right-hand turn and you don't know if the cyclist is going straight or making a right-hand turn with you? A savvy cyclist, and I've done this, we'll make the right turn with you just so they don't get run over. And they'll just hug the curb tight and go. And I have done that. Now, sometimes the curb runs out of space and then you're totally screwed because one of your wheels is going to hit that curb and you're going to flip over the bars. And the driver of the vehicle is not going to even understand what happened because they don't see you. So anyway, these things should be normal, everyday functions of renewing a license or a registration in a motorized vehicle. Just my opinion. I have a lot of them. This is Ron. I'm Peddling Ron, the Bicycle Talk guy. So there are a lot of situations here that you can run into when you're out riding in traffic. My best way of dealing with all of this is to avoid riding in traffic. I'm a really, really big believer of roads with names, not numbers, and trying my best to ride in with as few cars as I possibly can find. And I have a luxury where I live that I can do that because I live in a very rural area and I can pull that off. But occasionally, I have to get out in traffic. So I drive offensively defensive. I'll leave it at that. That's the word for the day, offensively defensive. We got to move on. We got more things to talk about here. My best out to Chris, and hope that he gets his injuries, that they heal quickly and he's not too badly bruised. And my hope is as soon as I see that police report that I take a look and I see that there was at least $100 fine for the person who was caught that tried to basically run away from the scene, but there were too many witnesses. I don't know exactly what all the details were, but anyway, I do know that the driver was confronted, and I do know that the driver said that they had no idea. So that's all I know at this point. So we'll see what happens, but the police report is essential. Second reason why a police report is essential in this case, should you have to pull in a legal a legal advisor to this situation. I'll leave it at that. Say there were some injuries that occurred. Say you wanted to get the driver of the vehicle to pay for your new helmet, because maybe you're riding on a, maybe you're riding a very expensive helmet on top of your head, or maybe just a basic helmet on top of your head. And it would be really nice if the driver were to pay for that because they caused damage. Or worse yet scenario, maybe they ran over your bike and destroyed your bike and now you need to replace the bike. You really, 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 really need to get a hold of that police report. Super important. Don't forget to do that, because once you have the police report, you can then have a legal professional take a look at the situation and see if something can be taken care of, at least getting your base expenses taken care of, emergency room visit, etc., that sort of thing. I mean, that should be a kind of a no-brainer, and their insurance will pay for it. Their car insurance will pay for that. They will take care of that. Yeah, they might get a point or two on their license. Tough, huh? Try not to hit people. Anyway, the right hook. I love the right hook. So, moving on from this, I have a bunch of other stuff to talk about, but last week we talked about the 15 best arguments for bike boosters, and this was from Streets Blog, and this was from last week, and we had five more to go. So I think we were down to number 11, e-bike subsidies work. Yes. Here we are. I just got this in Connecticut. It's a beautiful thing. While the federal government currently offers federal tax credit for electric cars up to $7,500, nothing similar exists for people buying an electric bike, unless you live in the state of Connecticut, where we now have that. So there are these programs that are happening. In the spring of 2022, Denver's incredibly popular e-bike incentive program has led to some notable results, including $1 million in cumulative annual savings for the city. Savings for the city. Researchers also calculated that the program avoided considerable amounts of greenhouse gas emissions, some 71% of survey respondents claiming to use their gas-powered vehicles less often. Those surveyed rode their e-bikes an average of 26 miles per week, replacing a 3.4 round trip vehicle trips. Importantly, 29% of Denver e-bike redeemers who completed the program survey indicated they were also new to riding. Yeah, listen, bike shops. Did you hear that? Just letting you know that if you're still snobbing out on the e-bike thing, get a clue. Shared micromobility is a good investment for cities. Bike and scooter share, known collectively as shared mobility, is a good investment for cities. When shared micromobility is done equitably, it can help alleviate transportation insecurity and lead to better public health, environmental, and economic outcomes. Unfortunately, not nearly enough municipalities treat shared micromobility as an integral part of their transit landscape fund it accordingly. That's a huge miss. A 2021 study found that bike share systems are a boon for public health, saving U.S. healthcare system more than $36 million a year on average. Another research paper from the same year looked at New York City's Citibike and found that the system, the largest in the United States, is a net win for the climate. In Britain, a more recent study found that if one-fifth of car trips were taken by shared electric bikes or scooters, the result would be more than $1.2 billion boost to the economy. That's number 12. Number 13, bike laws are often inequitably enforced. On paper, many bike laws, such as those that require people to wear helmets, use bike lights, obtain a bike license, register their bikes, seem like a great idea. After all, helmets can protect our heads in case of a crash. Lights help bikers be seen, and bike licenses can raise money for infrastructure. Bike registration safeguard people against theft. At least that's all true in theory. In reality, these laws are virtually unknown and rarely enforced. When they do get enforced, it's usually determined to the detriment of a Black, Indigenous, or people of color, or those experiencing homelessness. Not fair. Not fair at all. A report from Equitable Cities outlines how prevalent these transportation laws are in the U.S., in addition to the obvious trauma that can make even the most essential trip to the grocery store a fraught affair. These policies limit mobility, opportunity, and access. They also have implications beyond mobility in contributing to adverse political, social, economic, environmental, and health outcomes. There's also evidence that repealing the laws doesn't have negative effects. A 2023 study also found that after a helmet law was abolished in Seattle, helmet use actually increased. Interesting. I need to look into that one. That's kind of cool. Number 14, bicycling is really good for our youth. Well, duh. Yeah, there are obvious reasons why a bicycle advocate would like to see more kids on bikes, including the fact that youth are our city's future riders. The next generation of community leaders, what's less often talked about, are the holistic health benefits of bicycling offers for children. Aside from the obvious physical benefits of increased activity, youths who engage in regular physical activity report fewer depression and anxiety symptoms, have higher self-esteem, and also perform better academically than kids who are inactive. Number 15, the message is key. Don't always focus on bikes. In fact, if you can manage it, your messaging should focus on the benefits to everyone rather than just the benefits to those who are riding bikes. This may seem to be opposite the goal of getting people, you know, on more people riding bikes. But you know what? When you convince the people on the other side that this is good for them, then you're all set. Did anyone see my big fat Greek wedding? Make him think it was his idea, right? Anyway, I'll leave it with that. So, and that's a little reference. If you've never seen that movie, that's a very funny movie, by the way. So anyway, the way to get things done is to make it look good for not only yourself, but more, even better, for the others that you need to have involved with this to make it take effect. That's it. That's the last of the strategies of being a bike booster. And as I've always said, I really, really want you to get involved in your communities and talk more about bikes. This is my plan in life here, and I've got a lot of life left in me, is to continue to push this argument. I'm going to push it and push it and push it forever, because the more people we get out there taking action, the more people we put on bikes, the safer the streets get. More butts on bikes equals safer streets. Period. Proven. Flat out. Go to Copenhagen. Go to Amsterdam. You tell me. All right. Enough said. Let's see. What else do I have in here to talk about today? Oh, yeah. The U.S. Cycling Nationals. Yeah, that was this weekend. So, anyway, national championships. Men's road race. Quinn Simmons, who rides for Trek Segafredo, was first in the men's open. Second was Tyler Williams. Third was Tyler Stites. And fourth was Brandon McNulty. You know that team, that name too. He rides for the UAE team Emirates. And Samuel Boardman, also fifth. So that was in the men's. Let's see here. I've got everybody listed. Here we go. That's men's elite TT, Brandon McNulty. Yeah. Yeah. A rip-roaring time. Average speed, 51.5 kilometers per hour. Whew, that's fast stuff. Will Barta was second, and Joey Roskopf was third. Moving on to more results here. And let's see here. Let's go to the women's elite road race, which was yesterday. And it was Chloe Dygert. Yes, siree. She's back. She's riding strong. She looks real good. Corin Lebecki was second, and Skylar Schneider was third. And Lauren Stevens fourth, and Heidi Franz was fifth. So that would be the women's elite. And then the women's elite time trial. And Chloe Dygert again. Yahoo. Average speed, 44.7 kilometers per hour. Fast stuff. Lauren Stevens second, Amber Nebben third, Taylor Nibb fourth, and Laurel Quinones was fifth. So there we are. Nationals results. What else do we have here? The U23 road race and time trial. We got juniors. I'm going to go to juniors on this one first. Juniors road race. Darren Parham was first. The average speed in the juniors road race was 41.8 miles per hour, kilometers per hour. That was a 116-kilometer race. Luke Fetzer was second, and Elias Sach was third. And that was junior men, junior men's time trial. How fast are these little boys going? They're not little boys. They're very fast. Average speed of the winner was 45.9 kilometers per hour, won by Andrew August. Ben Stokes was second, and Gabriel Payne was third. And let's see what else we got here. Junior women's road race. And that would be Samantha Scott from Competitive Edge Racing. Is that out of Massachusetts, Competitive Edge? I think it is. That was average speed of 32.55 kilometers per hour, 87 kilometer distance. Second was Haley Johnson. Third was Ella Sabo. And let us see what happened here in their time trial. In their time trial, it looks like Samantha Scott is the smoking fast rider this year. She was first with an average speed of 36.6 kilometers per hour in a 17-kilometer time trial. Ella Brenneman was second, and Michaela Jaramillo was third. And that is basically our, other than our U23s, that was basically our national championships. So that was kind of interesting. Good stuff going on. Lots of good racing to watch if you were around to watch any of it at all. Let's see here. I know I have more in here. So, the next thing on my list here, the GCN's roundup of what happened around the world. See, this was kind of Nationals week for everywhere, is what it was. So even over in Europe, there was, that's just not going to work right there. Hang on here just a second. Okay. National Championships weekend. That's kind of what it was all around. Remco Evenepoel won his national road race wearing the rainbow jersey because he has that. And then a lot of nationals were decided. Let's see, women's race, Latke Kopecky took the win. And let's see, a Spanish men's race I have here. Olier Lazcano beat Juan Ayuso for the title. And in the Irish race, Ben Healy, fresh from form from the Giro, put in an enormous solo attack. And the Hungarian Championships was won by Blanka Voss. And Mark Hershey took the first national title in for the Swiss. British race, women's race, Pfeiffer Giorgio managed to take the title again. Italians women's race, Eliza Longo, Borghini doubled up after her time trial win. And let's see, German men's race, Emmanuel Bachmann. The French men's road race was soon to be with time. Oh, okay, seventh place. Okay, Valenti Madiots to his first title in the men's French race. So there's just a few of those stats out there. There's plenty more, I'm sure, that I have missed. We'll catch up on all this as we get closer. I gotta say something. The Tour de France is right around the corner. It is so right around the corner. Here we go. You know, July 1st, we start the tour. So there's lots of excitement going on. We've gotten through all the men's and women's nationals. There's going to be some great racing coming up. If you haven't seen any of the Unchained videos yet, this will get you fired up. I'm telling you, if you don't like bicycle racing, you will love it when you watch Unchained. It just totally opens the door to what goes on within cycling, within the peloton, what these folks are going through, how hard they work for the money they make. It's just incredible. I'm going on to events. I got to move on. Ongoing, it's the Bicycle Game on the Early History of Bicycles in Hartford, 1 Elizabeth Street, Hartford, Connecticut, at the Connecticut Historical Society. You might want to check that out before it goes away. It's so cool. The 110th edition of the 2023 Tour de France is July 1st, marking the second time that it has, jumping all over the place here, marking the second time that it has taken place in Basque Country and expect to finish in Paris around July 24. The Vuelta a España is the 78th edition of it, is August 26th. And then that's going to be the end of the Giant Classics. Remember, MADE, M-A-D-E, www.made.com, a new industry and consumer. A new industry consumer event highlighting the craft of handmade bicycles. It will be August 24th to the 27th in the Rose Quarter in Portland, Oregon. Sunday, July 23rd, the Quiet Corner Bike Tour, right here, ride on our roads. Check out why we talk about how wonderful it is to ride here, presented by the Thread City Cyclers. Great event. Come out and check it out. We've got the nicest roads in the state. It's really beautiful out here, and there is a severe lack of cars and trucks. Good news, there is a lot of elevation out here. I warn you ahead of time. On August 19th, you can do the same thing with the 32nd Annual Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is also featuring an 18-mile gravel ride for all you new gravel enthusiasts. Here we go. I have here also Saturday, September 30th, Charter Oak Park, Manchester, Connecticut, the Manchester Rotary in Motion free event. There's lots of things going on there. You can find out more at manchesterrotary.org. Finishing points. Shout out to Chris, the latest road warrior to lose the battle with the almighty SUV. I know, it's not the weapon. Oops, I mean car. It's the driver. Get the reference? Really? Hey there, how about those U.S. Nationals? Pretty cool stuff going on, and we are rapidly approaching the Tour de France time. More on that next week. Have you checked out that new Netflix trailer for Unchained? That might suck you in to go check it out. It's really, really cool. Definitely good. Are you ready to become a bicycle advocate? We have identified the 15 good reasons to become a bicycle advocate. Pick one, pick them all. Don't forget about the Bicycle Game in Hartford. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not express the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk. And without my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can make comments down here below. Otherwise, you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you want to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedalin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening.